Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This episode is brought to you by AG1. Did you ever try to eat chalk as a kid? One of my producers says that this is something they used to get into trouble doing. I try to stay away from nasty, chalky supplements and stick to my AG1. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 now and you'll get a free welcome kit that includes a shaker bottle, canister, and a metal scoop, along with 5 free travel packs and a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2, all with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/backbench. That's drinkag1.com/backbench. Check it out. This episode is brought to you by Rotman Executive Programs. AI is coming, whether we like it or not. While I'm honestly scared of AI, I'm also very curious about it. If you want to dive into the risks and rewards of generative AI, check out the Rotman School of Management. Elevate your skills to advance your career and future-proof your organization with Rotman's Generative AI and Organizational Transformation Program. Visit www.uft.me/RotmanAI to learn more. That's uft.me/RotmanAI.
Hey, it's Matea Roach, and this is The Backbench, a podcast about Canadian politics and free conference breakfasts.
So we are right outside the conference center, the Westin Hotel, getting ready for the Canada Strong and Free conference.
Yeah, excited. I'm feeling strong. I'm feeling free. Feeling Canada. Happy to get started. Beautiful day in Ottawa.
Phasing out coal generation here in Canada because it's bad for the environment, putting Canadians out of work just to turn around and pay a $52 million a year tariff to then buy coal-fired power from the U.S. where there is no such thing as a carbon tax.
We support traditional marriage and we support the protection of innocent human life from conception until natural death.
It's fantastic to be here in Canada with this incredible sense that the Conservative Party is not only resurgent, but poised for victory.
Justin Trudeau loves talking, and he loves people having to hear him talk, but this is like one opportunity to sit down that he doesn't want to take, because he doesn't want to hear what the premiers like you have to tell him.
These are our people. That is our country. This is our home. Your home, my home, our home. Let's bring it home. Thank you very much.
That was the taste of the Canada Strong and Free conference that happened April 10th to 13th in Ottawa. It's one of the biggest events for small C conservatives to meet, discuss ideas, network, and rub shoulders. My producer Sam at Aviva attended to get a feel for where the conservative movement is headed in Canada. You always hear people who are complaining about the Conservative Party, Big C, that, you know, they say that Pierre Poilievre is dog whistling to his base with some of his remarks. But who makes up his base? What do these people believe? Who's a part of this burgeoning conservative movement? These seem like questions that we should try to answer if we're actually going to complain or wring our hands about Pierre Poilievre's dog whistling. Sam and Aviva were very brave, very intrepid, and they spoke to lots of people. And genuinely, I am dying to hear what they saw. I would have gone to this conference, but I was in New York being very glamorous, having a Getty Images photo taken of me for the first time, but also having incredible FOMO about, again, a conference that was happening in Ottawa. Like, you know, it has to be incredibly exciting for me to have that sort of reaction. So now the stars of the show, for once, they're always the stars to me. Sam and Aviva, welcome to the front end of the backbench.
Thanks for having us. Can't wait.
Thank you. I'm excited to hear my own voice.
I want a vibe check about the Canada Strong and Free conference. Like, I want you to set the scene, make me feel like I was there. What were some of the first things that you noticed when you arrived?
So it was at the Westin Hotel in Ottawa, which is just off Rideau Street. You can see Parliament from the front door. So it was quite a setting. And it was a typical conference. It was three floors. They had a media room that we set up in.
There were a lot of suits. Everybody was in suits. Very formal, very buttoned up. Kind of a real excitement in the air. Lots of people walking around, milling about, getting ready.
One thing that was a little bit weird is there was a book being handed out called Against the Great Reset, 18 Theses Contra the New World Order. And it has like a big caricature of Klaus Schwab, the founder of the World Economic Forum, on it. So that was kind of a tell of what we were expected to see over the next couple days.
For listeners who maybe are not versed in this sort of, like, I would say more conspiracy oriented, but just generally populist wing of global conservative politics, what is the Great Reset, and why would a book that has a caricature of the founder of the World Economic Forum, who's like not a guy that I really ever think about, why would that book be handed out at this conference?
The Great Reset was kind of an economic recovery plan after COVID-19. It was to get the world kind of kickstarted back into its economic ways. And I guess the conspiracy theory that some of the further right, but apparently the small C conservatives in Canada are super concerned about, is that sort of the global elite is using the COVID pandemic to sort of dismantle capitalism and enact radical social change. And there was just a little bit of a shock seeing that book for everyone to grab.
Did you grab a copy?
Oh, of course. I know you can't see it, but I'm holding it right here.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, I can see the cover. It's pretty scary looking. I do love a good hate read. Like, I had a lot of fun during COVID reading 12 Rules for Life, like Peterson's magnum opus. Some of the clean your room stuff was pretty good. Some of the stuff about gender, less good, I would say.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because he's quoted on the back with his love for this book. Also, Steve Bannon is quoted on the back about this book. So
genuinely, if you're involved in sort of this global conservative movement, these are your luminaries. Like, that's huge praise, I suppose, for this book. All right. So there were lots of suits, lots of, like, I'm imagining kind of clean cut, nice young men that are excited about getting involved in politics. Maybe they think they're going to get staffer jobs on the Hill in a year and a half. They're there to network. They're there to see the sights. Am I right here? Like, what sorts of people were there? I imagine you weren't the only media there. Maybe there was some right-wing media, some traditional media, you know, volunteers, like big names, big stars. Who did you see?
We did see multiple news outlets there, including a lot of right-wing outlets, like you said. So there was Rebel Media, True North, Epoch Times, Post Millennial, Counter Signal. They were recording a bunch of the events. They had a large presence there.
Yeah, and for some of the bigger events, like Danielle Smith, Premier of Alberta, was there.
Without further ado, please help me in welcoming Premier Smith.
Why, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you. Thank you for the warm welcome. And thanks to Hardy for the great introduction. I think he's as surprised as I am to see as many people in the room after the hospitality suites last night. So thanks for getting up early this morning.
Blaine Higgs, Premier of New Brunswick.
Without further ado, please help me in welcoming Premier Higgs and Andrew Lawton up to the stage.
All the traditional media was there. So that's one thing that they all felt like they needed to cover. And funny enough, at the start of the conference, one of the very first things the head of the conference said was that we need to respect the media. We're happy we're here. Don't say anything crazy.
Now, the media has taken an interest in us once again, and so I want you all to govern yourselves accordingly. Please be measured and balanced if you're talking to them. The media is here because we aren't hiding that conservatives have expert, practical alternatives for policy on things like affordability, the environment, foreign affairs, etc. And hopefully they'll also get reported by the media, because I'm tired of hearing we don't have alternatives. I will tell you, we did get an initial no from the Globe and Mail. They said, we thought nobody went to conservative rallies and conferences anymore. They're too crowded these days.
So funny enough, I saw the Globe reporter that was actually at the conference kind of like shake his head when they spoke about the Globe. I don't think he necessarily agreed with the story that the presenter was laying out. There was also a ton of like booths set up as part of the conference. There was a man who had just written a book called Confessions of a Conservative. There was one called Pandemic Panic. So a bit of a smorgasbord there. We did speak to a gentleman who was part of the Christian Heritage Party.
I'm Rod Taylor. I'm national leader of the Christian Heritage Party of Canada. And we're here presenting our political party. We're the only federal political party that supports the supremacy of God and the rule of law. We support traditional marriage between one man and one woman. And we support the protection of innocent human life from conception until natural death. Carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. It's a natural beneficial gas that plants need to survive. So that's an opinion. Political correctness, wokeness has caused people to be afraid to speak the truth about biological reality. So so we're defending the truth.
What's interesting to me about that clip is he sort of acknowledges the diversity of views that are represented. And that's like not a view that the mainstream Conservative Party exactly espouses. But I guess that, you know, people who are involved in the Christian Heritage Party, there's a reason that they're involved in that party as opposed to the federal conservatives. And they want to be part of the conversation, maybe push the federal conservatives further to the right on that issue.
That's like something that we kept hearing throughout the whole conference, is that this is a discussion. This is where conservatives come to hash out points of contention. So it was interesting to hear all the different sides of conservatism in Canada. And then that really transferred into like the demographics of who we were seeing. So we ran into this one guy. He was 15.
I joined the party, I think, last summer. So I've been a member for almost a year now. So it's, yeah, and I've loved it. I've, you know, worked on a lot of campaigns and really just tried to, you know, help out as much as I can and attend as many events and connect with as many people as possible. And conservatives are really generous and they're really nice, really great people.
Lots of campaigns in a year. I'm like, what campaigns? I guess maybe like nomination campaigns with a view to the upcoming election. I think a lot of local riding associations are probably having their nomination elections. So maybe he's talking about that. Maybe he's talking about provincial elections. It's interesting that so many young people specifically are being engaged and really feel galvanized by the conservative movement, because I think conventional wisdom historically has been that young people gravitate towards the left and then you sort of like become more conservative as you age.
It's just nice to see that young people are getting politically involved, and this is a place where they can do that. So that was cool to see, actually. And another thing that I thought was interesting was just the amount of volunteers in the room. Like as for a conference of that size, it was pretty seamless. Everyone was taken care of super well. And I think a lot of those volunteers were a bit self-motivated. Like this is a chance for them to really rub shoulders with some of the big names in the room.
I'm a member of the Conservative Values Tomorrow program at the Canada Strong and Free Network. I think for me, with this entire program, it's just been about getting further connected into the conservative movement and really developing my skills, you know, in terms of me wanting to work on the Hill, be a future staffer. And the program, it's been really good in terms of networking opportunities. You know, we're rifling through this whole VIP box here. I'm supposed to be volunteering and seeing all these names of all these people that I'll get to meet, right? People that I sort of look up to.
Anyone you're especially excited to hear from?
Definitely Bojo, Boris Johnson. That's got to be a highlight. Actually, especially Eric Duhem, having lived in Quebec, in Montreal for 8 years, understanding, you know, the nascent conservative movement and the way that Quebec politics is playing out. I'm definitely excited to meet Mr. Eric Duhem. Yeah, that's for sure.
Polyev?
Yeah, of course. I mean, of course we're excited to meet Polyev.
I love that he's like, it doesn't even merit mentioning that I'm excited to meet Polyev. Like, who would not be excited to meet Polyev? Bojo, definitely one of the people I had the most FOMO about. I was like, what's that man going to say? Like, he's funny.
And there were also a couple big wigs like hanging around the conference. We spotted a certain former conservative leader.
Oh my God, spill. Who was it?
Say who you're talking about.
Oh my God, that's Andrew Scheer. Oh, he looks so nice. He's a lot taller than I thought he would be. There's a very young man waiting to get a photo with him. It's kind of sweet in like a nerdy rock star type of way.
He's patiently waiting. He really wants the photo.
I guess we're patiently waiting too. We're in the same boat.
We got to ask him how he was feeling like about the kind of momentum in the room and the momentum of that this conference was bringing.
It's always great to see people from all across the country come and talk about the principles that create prosperity and improve freedom. And this is one of those exciting events that I look forward to.
Do you think it bodes well for the Conservative Party heading forward?
there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic for the party, and that's because our leader, Pierre Poilievre, has been concentrating on the issues that affect people.
How many people would you say in total were at this conference?
I've heard for the bigger like panels, there was around 1,000 people. So quite a lot of people really out with a lot of energy as well.
For a sort of like federal, fairly niche, I guess, political conferences are in terms of who they engage, I would say that's like pretty good attendance.
Yeah, and I think that's a sign of kind of conservatives of the past not defining themselves as this sort of quote unquote big tent party, but they're really opening their doors to anyone that feels disenfranchised enough to join, or anyone that feels like they're not happy with the direction of the country. And that's something that we saw over and over again. It didn't matter what you believed, because there was disagreements that we'll talk about soon, but it's that they were unhappy with the country and the direction it's going. They're really reaching out to a wider base of people.
This episode is brought to you by AG1. Did you hear they're getting close to picking a new James Bond? I love those movies. My college roommate was the president of our college James Bond Society. I spent many an evening watching the campy movies from the 80s. But you know, I think if I were the new James Bond, I'd tell Q to leave all the secret weapons with MI6 and just give me some more AG1. Like, that's really all I would need. AG1 is held to the highest quality standards. Their research, sourcing, manufacturing, and testing go above and beyond industry standards. And AG1 tastes great and keeps me sharp. I'm really into my AG1 routine. It just makes me feel good. So if you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 now, and you'll get a free welcome kit that includes a shaker bottle, canister, and metal scoop, along with 5 free travel packs and a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2, all with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/backbench. That's drinkag1.com/backbench. Check it out.
Which leads us into one of the areas of policy that there was actual disagreement on, and there were multiple perspectives offered. Even with the people we spoke to, they had varying opinions on it, which is climate change and how government should be involved in mitigating climate change, or perhaps not believing that it exists. And it came across during the Boris Johnson-Tony Abbott panel. So we have Boris Johnson, former Prime Minister of the UK, Tony Abbott, former Prime Minister of Australia, and they had a little bit of a sparring match when the issue of climate change came up.
I just want to preface this by, this is almost immediately as the conference started. So like within 20 minutes, this topic arose, and then two massive heads of state were already going at each other, and the crowd loved it.
I said period. England under
the mini
Romans.
Ice age.
I said
yes, England under the Romans was a very warm place.
Tony's right. Under the 11th century, we were very warm. Under the Romans, we produced a huge amount of wine. I tried all that. They sneered at me, Tony.
You should not have been put off.
Well,
by their score.
You should rise
above
that.
You should have persisted with the cross-examination. But truly, there are obviously...
I don't have your scientific confidence, Tony.
There are... But there are obviously factors in climate change way beyond mankind's carbon dioxide emissions. Because if mankind's carbon dioxide emissions were the only things that mattered, we would never have had the ice ages. We would never have had previous periods of climate change.
So in that little spat that we just heard, it was clear that people were more on Tony Abbott's side. And that was confirmed when we talked to one of the organizers of the conference right after. I asked him, who do you think the crowd was more inclined to believe? And he said Tony Abbott for sure. There's definitely more people in this room that don't side with Boris, which is kind of funny because everyone was so excited to see Boris Johnson, the Brexit hero. And then it was just kind of funny to hear the crowd turn a little bit.
Boris is such a fascinating political figure to me, first of all, because he seems like he has a pathological need to make high level kind of academic, like you can tell he went to Eton analogies in absolutely any and every public engagement he does, including when he appeared on like Top Gear when he was, I think, just an MP. Like, I find it really hilarious. But I think because he was mayor of London in his role there, I think that like mayors of major cities there's something that happens there where you sort of like look at climate in a different way, even if you are a conservative mayor than somebody who's like a federal conservative politician. And I think that that's where a lot of his attitude on climate policy seems to stem from his time as mayor of London. And then it like sort of permeated when he went into federal politics in the UK. Obviously, though, we've seen this massive turn in the conservative movement in Canada, really away from, I would say, much meaningful climate action. I know in 2021, when Erin O'Toole was leader of the Conservative Party, he was like very, very proud. And people who backed him in the leadership were very, very proud of how they felt that they had like a reasonable policy to sort of phase out carbon emissions. And they recognized that this was something that was important to do. But the Liberals and the NDP were kind of promising too much and their targets weren't attainable. So isn't it better to have an attainable target? What I'm interested in going forward, because we see this sort of feeling in the conservative movement that they feel like certain members of the mainstream media are just like accusing them of having no climate plan or accusing them of having no strategy to deal with certain big issues. It seems like climate is a huge wedge within conservatism still in Canada. How do you guys see this playing out as we move forward? Because this conference, it seems like one of the spaces where this issue is like being hashed out in real time.
Well, clearly it was on their mind because there was a number of panels like dedicated to it. There was a panel called Carbon Tech, Not Taxes, another one called Europe's Net Zero Rebellion and the Coming North American Reckoning. There was a lot of time dedicated, I think, to understanding what direction the policy should go with a lot of different takes on that.
What is the net zero rebellion? Like, is that a lot of European countries have adopted net zero policies and then people are realizing they don't want it? And then that's also going to happen in North America? Like, is that what that was about?
Yeah. So there's been protests over EU policy, over net zero rebellion. So there's like farmers have been a big leader in this. Those tractor demonstrations that have like been all over the Netherlands, things like that. So that's something that the Canadian Conservatives have really looked to as something that's going to happen here because Europe is ahead of us in their net zero goals. And they think that the North American audience just isn't going to adjust to that well, especially when the results of it finally start to kick in, when people are going to be having to spend $10,000 more on an electric car made in China, which they were more than happy to present many times that all this net zero stuff is coming from China. But it's funny because one of the panels right before we spoke to the moderator of the panel and we were asking her a bunch of climate questions. And then she kept talking about how we need to do carbon tech capture, not carbon reduction. And then eventually Aviva just asked her, well, do you think that climate change is human caused?
And when you do see sort of like, you know, the wildfires, different natural disasters, it doesn't feel like it's connected.
And she said,
no.
No.
But, you know, that wasn't how everybody was thinking. We spoke with another man who is a lawyer in BC, and he had a different take on it.
And you look at the increasing rate of consumption, especially of coal around the world. It's on a massive rise, okay? And there's been, you know, everyone's talked about working to achieve near net zero, which is great. But what's not being addressed is this massive increase, right?
Yeah, and it's funny because when you're looking to these people to create carbon tech, not carbon reduction, but they don't really see the need to reduce carbon, it obviously begs the question, who are these policies for, you know?
Yeah, I also kind of wonder this because I feel like the Liberal and sort of also NDP strategy in recent federal elections in Canada has been in a lot of cases to kind of like wag the finger at the Conservatives and say, if you're a climate concerned voter, like you can't vote for this party because they don't have a strategy. And so it seems like there's kind of they're at this fork in the road where I don't think we're going to see any sort of conservative return to carbon pricing because like, so many people are so opposed to it. And the Liberals have like completely bungled and fucked up the implementation of it. So it's like basically dead in the water. I think it's going to go by the wayside once the Conservatives are elected. But I guess, yeah, like, do we take climate change seriously at all? Do we respond by maybe building and investing in clean tech? Is it carbon capture? do we even believe that humans are responsible for climate change? That seems like a less important debate electorally.
A lot of the parties are in disarray over this. It's not just the conservatives. This topic has the potential to divide bases among any party lines, any policy-oriented people. And then the NDP also backed out, saying carbon pricing is not the be-all, end-all of the fight against climate change.
I find it problematic that the Liberals have set up a divisive system where they're dividing the country.
And we did hear a bit more about the potential conservative climate policy in Polyev's speech. We didn't get too many details on it. I mean, broadly speaking, we know he is obviously against the carbon tax, his famous axe the tax line.
Who's ready to axe the tax?
I believe that we should fight to protect our environment and combat climate change with technology and not taxes. I believe in lowering the cost of alternatives rather than raising the cost of traditional energy we still need. I believe in green lighting green projects.
In his world, it's about investing in green technology, not taxing.
I think my issue is like, okay, invest in what kind of renewable tech? There's like different sorts of problems that you can run into with different kinds of renewable tech. But on face, it does make sense. If it's like economies of scale, right? Like if you have more of some sort of other power source, in theory, it becomes cheaper to deliver that to people, right? Or as electric cars become more commonplace and more manufacturers start to make them, in theory, you then get to a place where there are some cheaper models of electric car. There's like more charging stations on highways, like things like that. I think you do need a certain amount of investment in clean tech to make it feel like a reasonably affordable option for people. And I think like what's really smart about this messaging is that he's tying this climate stuff to cost of living issues, right? Like pocketbook issues. People are very concerned, like across the political spectrum, about cost of living, about inflation, about how am I going to afford, you know, my housing and also my groceries and also like my home heating, if that's something I have to pay for separately, transportation, like all this stuff. Also, nothing in what he just said denies the existence of climate change at all. Like he's kind of saying, you know, if you believe in climate change, like we also take it seriously. We just think that this is a better way to do it. And we're not going to like charge you just obscene amounts of money for your gas or whatever it is that people feel like. And then I think that makes that policy more palatable to the climate change deniers, right? They don't think they're being punished for like a fake problem that they don't even believe in.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And in terms of renewables, he did speak about trying to increase hydro power in Quebec. And then he also has a big push towards prioritizing natural gas, really investing in that and getting Canadian natural gas to the rest of the world.
Going to unleash the power of natural gas. We have 1,300 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. So get the numbers that came out from National Bank. National Bank pointed out that Canada has 0.7 billion tons of emissions. India will be adding many billions of emissions as a result of their use of coal fire. If Canada were to liquefy and export its natural gas to allow India to replace half of its future coal-fired electricity with clean Canadian gas liquefied in Canada, we could reduce global emissions by 2.5 billion tons. That's three times more than the entire Canadian economy emits in a year.
Later on in the speech as well, he did talk about nuclear energy and the importance of investing in that. And that wasn't just him. That was a common thread throughout a lot of these climate talks, is that nuclear is a super viable way forward. In case anyone had any doubt about whether this guy has support, he was a rock star. In this conference, he got up there and people went nuts. A protester stood up and screamed about climate change and forest fires, and it did not even faze him. He had the whole crowd chanting "Axe the tax" within 30 milliseconds.
Bro, the liberals need more good rhymes. Like, this is why they're going to lose the election. Whatever shit the liberals are announcing for renters, none of it rhymes. I can't even remember what it's called because it doesn't rhyme.
If there's one thing they don't have, it's they don't have a marketing problem, because they kept hearing these catchphrases all throughout. Common sense conservatives, axe the tax, just inflation, killer, really.
No, it's like they're honestly so smart. Like, I feel like if I were Jenny Byrne right now, she's the chief campaign strategist, I would feel so proud of myself every day. Like, I'm sleeping probably so soundly at night.
Right before Poilievre came on, Trudeau was testifying at the Foreign Interference Commission, and it came out that with all these written briefings that he didn't see, he said that he prefers oral briefings rather than written ones. And so Poilievre spent the first 5 minutes, what I'm assuming is completely off the top of his head, making fun of Trudeau's ability to read. Honestly, quite impressive that he could just come up with that and roll with it throughout the entire speech.
He doesn't read briefing notes. Now, we often don't believe the things that this guy says, but I think that most Canadians would believe that defense.
It was kind of like he was a stand-up comic and he had his little, like, callback that just kind of kept coming up and coming up at the end. That was his little, like, hook, you know?
The only thing worse than having some all-knowing elite try to control everybody's life is to have someone doing that when he doesn't even read his briefing notes, right?
He was riffing. What that reminds me of, actually, is there's this hilarious Trudeau quote from, like, the early aughts, and he said to the press, "I don't read the newspapers. I don't watch the news. I figure if something important happens, someone will tell me."
Yeah, old habits die hard.
That's been his approach literally ever since. Like, I genuinely think he still probably doesn't want to read the news. And he's like, Jerry Butts or Katie Telford will tell me if something important happens. And you know what? Power to him. The news, it's a shit ton of criticism of him a lot of the time. I wouldn't want to read it either.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This episode is brought to you by Rotman Executive Programs. Artificial intelligence is everywhere. There's no escaping it.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
So you might as well kind of give in to this fact and stay on top of it. If you want to dive into the risks and rewards of generative AI, check out the Rotman School of Management. With Rotman's Generative AI and Organizational Transformation Program, you can elevate your skills to advance your career and future-proof your organization. Discover practical applications for AI and drive value for your organization while learning from industry experts over a 3-day course at Rotman. From upskilling employees to ethical concerns, gain the confidence to tackle this technology. Generative AI is a once-in-a-generation opportunity. Don't get left behind. Visit www.uft.me/RotmanAI to learn more. Again, that's uft.me/RotmanAI.
Okay, so Poilievre is he's just slaying. Like, he's absolutely killing it. He's got them in the palm of his hand. What does he do next?
In many aspects, it was a speech he's given many times before. We ran into a backbench favorite and previous panelist, Nick Taylor-Vasey from Politico, who's seen him speak many, many times. And this is what he had to say.
Well, Poilievre delivered the kind of speech he is very comfortable delivering, which is to say, he started by trashing the prime minister, and then he segued to trashing the prime minister's father, and then he pivoted to his sort of first principles as a conservative leader and a conservative person, and then he settled into his very well-practiced stump speech.
Here often, as we've been told, ends his speech with this sort of thought experiment that he'd like us to do to envision what Canada could be. And he launches into this story about this husband and wife who have children.
Maybe the wife works in the energy sector. maximizing great Canadian energy while bringing home a powerful paycheck. Maybe her husband swings a hammer, banging nails to build beautiful and affordable homes for some other family to live in. And maybe as they drive to pick up their kids, they pass a cenotaph to see local Legionnaires sweeping away debris and planting fresh flowers in honor of our heroes. And when they bring their kids home and finish squabbling with them to get them to bed, and they sit down at the kitchen table, secure that they can afford their home and their life, that they're safe in their community, their eyes meet in a way that can only say, we made it. The promise was kept. Because after it all, after all the hard work, we are home.
That's very idyllic.
Yeah,
but why can't it be a wife and a wife? Why can women be carpenters, Pierre? But the woman has a job, you know?
A good job, maybe.
Yeah, maybe she's making more money, actually. I feel like working in clean tech, I don't know, carpenters actually also make really good money.
Don't get carried away.
Don't assume it's clean tech.
No? Well, what is she doing?
Energy sector.
Oh, she's drill baby drill.
Yeah.
See, I'm seeing what I want to see. It's like working on me.
It is. And Nick said that he did notice a little bit of a change.
I notice, used to talk about that couple sitting on a porch at the end of a day. And today he spoke about a kitchen table. So I don't know if there's a rhetorical pivot happening there.
I was expecting Pierre to say maybe like that the table was made of Canadian lumber, but he didn't go that far.
With these little anecdotes that he continually brings up, they sound idyllic, but there is a lot of subtext in them. They talk to their kid who was taught history in school.
No fear that their kids will be abducted or harmed, and that when they get to school, they'll learn about reading, writing, arithmetic, and history.
And of course, the subtext being is that it's all gender theory in school now. The kids aren't taught history anymore. That is something that was, again, Polyev was like the apotheosis of this, but it was throughout the whole conference, there was these subtexts. Everything's gone to shit.
This is the irony, the great irony of his leadership, and one of the reasons why I think he's succeeded in doubling housing costs, giving us the worst inflation in 40 years, sending 2 million people to the food banks, 8,000 people signing up for a Facebook group called the Dumpster Diving Network because they now have to eat out of a garbage can after he drove food prices rising with his carbon tax. He wants to control every aspect of your life.
These were also echoed in Premier Danielle Smith and Premier Blaine Higgs's speeches too.
I believe we have to protect children from making decisions that they are far too young to make and that could prevent them from having children of their own when they do ultimately become adults.
The big topics that they were talking about were parental rights, because that's something that's been in the news so much and something that has been a real rallying point for the conservative base.
There was a panel dedicated to parental rights on top of the Higgs and Smith speeches, and they just really articulated that it's an issue that they, in a way, don't want to go away. Like, they believe in it strongly, and one panelist said,
when the conversation is over, that means somebody has won. So we need to keep the conversation going.
So it kind of makes me understand that this is a topic that they want to continually see in the media. They want to continually see protests about and keep on the agenda and keep like in the spotlight. You kind of see like a disenfranchisement, heavily advocating for homeschooling, like a distrust of the public school system. There's for sure a distrust of mainstream media. There was a panel about regulating the internet that we got to see that on. There was a popular YouTuber named David Freiheit who was speaking about his hopes to dismantle the CBC, basically get rid of mainstream media. And the crowd really loved that particular point of view. Even if another point of view was offered, they seemed to really gravitate to the canceling of CBC, for example.
Defund the CBC, period. That's $1.6 billion.
I know that's going to be a really popular thing in this room.
He was definitely treated like a rock star in the room. The other two panelists were much more moderate, saying things like, there is a place for CBC, especially in local news. But he shut them down, and the crowd really loved it. And after the panel, I was a bit hurt, honestly, by what he had to say. But
after the panel, I felt like I needed to go run after and talk to him to ask him some follow-up questions. And I basically asked him what the crowd, like the cheers from the crowd, is telling him about what the like importance of the discussion is. And this is what he had to say.
I wasn't coming in there expecting there to be a populist vibe to the crowd. And I wasn't trying to, placate or appeal to the crowd. I think the crowd gets it more than many of the people involved in policy. Like the crowd are the ones who are consuming the internet, the content, who are living on the internet, and who see the problems firsthand, or at least the consequences of the problems. The policymakers, I think, still see it as a bit of a, not an ivory tower, but too far detached.
When you hear the criticism of public media as being very ivory tower, I know that's something that public broadcasters in a lot of countries have sort of tried to combat in recent years. A friend of mine was talking about completely a different event to me the other day, and he was like, basically offering to go ahead and be a scout for me and do a vibe check. And he was like, I will let you know if the vibe is eager or if it's ravenous. Would you say that the room was eager or ravenous for a political revolution in Canada?
I would say eager, definitely eager. People felt confident, I would say. I mean, we've been seeing how well the Conservatives are doing in the polls. We heard the frustration expressed over the Trudeau government.
It felt like a wave, honestly. Like, people were riding this wave. This has always been branded as, like, a movement-based conference. So it's something that this is a time where people really try and build momentum. And this is a really important time in federal politics where people need to be cementing their policies down and they need to be deciding what the party is going to be doing going forward. And this is small conservatives that I'm talking about right now, that they need to get on the same page. And I think this is a really important weekend for the Conservative Party in general, just because it drums up support, gets people excited, and it also has the double effect of narrowing down the policy.
Overall, it was really cool to just see the politicians face-to-face, to see Poilievre actually give his speech, see the energy that it created, get a better sense of who he is.
I think it's a little bit like you're being anthropologists, was how I was thinking of it, right? Like, you're going to sort of the natural habitat of these politicians and seeing what they're like when they're among their own kind and not when they're in the House debating with other parties, when they're talking amongst themselves, or not when they're doing media hits. It's very different when politicians are speaking to everyone versus when they're speaking to their most diehard supporters, right?
Yeah, and for me, other than like the buffet, it was really interesting for me to see the wide array of conservatives there. The book that we got right off the bat really set the tone. And then seeing like Counter Signal, the quite far right news organization, have their own booth there really just drove home to me that the conservatives are widening their reach and taking anyone that is feeling disenfranchised with the country. And I think they'll continue to do that.
This is a party that right now is amazing at campaigning. But, you know, running a campaign and running a government successfully are two very different skill sets. You know, some people are really good at one and not the other. I think that time will tell whether the Conservatives can pivot effectively to governing and can kind of like keep this base that they've established for themselves together, or whether in having to choose a course of action on, for instance, climate policy, they're going to sort of alienate some of the people that they brought into the fold. Like, to quote RuPaul, as she often says on her eponymous Drag Race, I can't wait to see how this turns out. Sam and Aviva, thank you so much for being my eyes and ears on the ground in Ottawa. It's been great chatting with you for the listeners instead of just talking shit off the mic.
Oh, well, it's been really fun.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, let's adjourn. That's been The Backbench. We'll talk again in 2 weeks when, whether I like it or not, I will be back on television. Jeopardy! Masters is airing on ABC in the US, and I'm pretty sure on CTV in Canada. Check your local listings because the airing schedule is complex and I don't want to have to read all of it. Let us know what you're pissed off about, what you've been watching closely, and what you want to hear us discuss in the world of Canadian politics. Send us your questions, your concerns, and your rants. You can email us at backbench@candleland.com, and you can also DM us on Twitter @backbenchcast. I'm Matea Roach, and you can find me @Matea Roach on Twitter and Instagram. Stephen Harper was the first leader of the current iteration of the Federal Conservative Party, the Conservative Party of Canada. The sort of assumed precursor to this party was the Progressive Conservatives, who were last led by Peter MacKay. Peter MacKay won his leadership election by promising to not merge with the Canadian Alliance, which he promptly did once he won the leadership. This episode was produced by Aviva Lessard and Sam Connert, with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our production coordinator is Andre Proulx. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. Theme music is by Nathan Burley. Submissions are open for our first ever short-form audio contest. We're looking for 3-minute audio pieces about stories that are local to you to be featured on one of our podcasts. Whether you're a journalist, audio producer, filmmaker, artist, storyteller, really any kind of creative, this is a great opportunity to get your work in front of tens of thousands of listeners just like you. We want to hear the stories you have to tell, so hit the link in the show notes to learn more or visit candleland.com/audio contest. If you value this podcast, support us. You'll get premium access to all our shows ad-free, including early releases and bonus content. You'll also get our exclusive newsletter, discounts on merch, tickets to our live and virtual events, and more than anything, you'll be a part of the solution to Canada's journalism crisis by keeping our work free and accessible to everybody. You can listen ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Thank you for listening.